Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 36, The Slaying of Arishta, the Bull Demon. Text 18. Nishamya,
Nishamya,
Tat,
Tat,
Bhojapati,
Bhojapati,
Kopat,
Kopat,
Prachalita,
Prachalita,
Indriya,
Indriya,
Nishatam,
Nishatam,
Asim,
Asim,
Adata,
Adata,
Vasudeva,
Vasudeva,
Jigamsaya, Nishamya tad bhojapati,
Nishamya tad bhojapati,
Kopat prachalitendriya,
Kopat prachalitendriya,
Nishatam asim adatta,
Nishatam asim adatta,
Vasudeva jigam shaya, Nishamya tad bhojapati,
Nishamya tad bhojapati,
Kopat prachalitendriya,
Kopat prachalitendriya,
Nishatam asim adatta,
Nishatam asim adatta,
Vasudeva jigam saya, Nishamya,
Nishamya,
hearing,
hearing,
tat,
tat,
that,
Bhojapati,
Bhojapati, the Lord of the Bhoja dynasty,
Lord of the Bhoja dynasty,
Kamsa,
Kamsa,
Kopat,
Kopat,
out of anger,
out of anger,
Prachalita,
Prachalita,
disturbed,
disturbed,
Indriya,
Indriya,
his senses,
his senses,
Nishatam,
Nishatam,
sharp,
sharp,
Asim,
Asim,
a sword,
a sword,
Adata,
Adata,
took up,
took up,
Vasudeva,
Vasudeva,
Jigamsaya,
Jigamsaya,
with the desire to kill Vasudeva.
With the desire to kill Vasudeva.
Translation. Upon hearing this, the master of the Bhojas became furious and lost control of his senses. He picked up a sharp sword to kill Vasudeva. Please repeat. Upon hearing this,
upon hearing this,
the master of the Bhojas became furious.
The master of the Bhojas became furious.
And lost control of his senses.
He lost control of his senses.
He picked up a sharp sword.
He picked up a sharp sword.
To kill Vasudeva. There's no purport, so we'll read the next verse, text 19. Nivarito naradena tatsuto mrittamatmana gyatvaloha mayai pashair babanda sahabaryaya Vivarito naradena tatsuto mrityumatmana gyatvaloha mayais pasayar babanda sahabaryaya Vivarita chat
naradena
by Narada
tatsuto
His two sons. Mrityum, death. Atmanah,
his own.
Gyatva,
understanding.
Loha mayai,
made of iron.
Pashai,
with shackles.
Babanda,
he bound up.
Vasudev.
Saha,
together with.
Baryaya,
his wife. Translation. But Narada restrained Kamsa by reminding him that it was the two sons of Vasudeva who would cause his death. Kamsa then had Vasudeva and his wife shackled in iron chains. Purport. Kamsa realized that there was no use in killing Vasudeva, since it was Vasudeva's sons, Krishna and Balaram, who were to kill him. According to the Acharyas, Narada also advised Kamsa that if he killed Vasudev, the two young boys might flee, and that it was therefore better not to kill him. Rather, Narada recommended Kamsa should bring Krishna and Balaram to Kamsa's capital city. What's the name of Kamsa's capital city? Mathura. Thus spoke Mathuranath. Mathuranath means the Lord of Mathura. Does that refer to Kamsa? No, he's not the real Lord of Mathura. Refers to Krishna. Huh? Yes, rather, Narada recommended Kamsa should bring Krishna and Balaram to Kamsa's capital city, Mathura. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that Narada did not act inimically toward the great devotees Vasudeva and Devaki when he revealed this information to Kamsa. In fact, as explained in the 11th canto, Vasudeva was grateful to Narada because he was arranging for Kamsa's death at Krishna's hands, and further arranging for Krishna to come and live in Mathura, where his loving father could associate with him. Hare Krishna. Though sometimes the activities of devotees are very mysterious, Krishna and Balaram had taken shelter in Vrindavan to be protected from Kamsa's efforts to kill them. And here the great sage Narada is informing Kamsa of the fact that Balaram and Krishna were actually sons of Vasudeva, and that they were in Vrindavan. And they were responsible for killing all the demons that Kamsa sent to Vrindavan to kill them. This information infuriated Kamsa, who became so angry that he was ready to kill Vasudeva, as we just read. But Narada intervened and convinced him that it was better to spare Vasudeva and rather bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. Now, by revealing the truth, Narada put Vasudeva in a precarious position, or apparently in a precarious position. And so too Krishna and Balaram, although Narada knew that Krishna and Balaram are the supreme lords and therefore there was no risk for them. But he did so with a plan which was to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura to kill Kamsa. And at the same time satisfy Vasudeva and Devaki and other devotees of Krishna in Mathura. And Vasudeva actually appreciated the act of Narada. So this is a lesson to us that great devotees may have plans that we are unable to understand, and we should see the value of their plans and activities. Sometimes it happens that someone acts in a way that appears to be against our self-interest, but which is actually meant for a higher purpose. They themselves may not be aware of the higher purpose, but the devotee who appears to be the victim of the harsh behavior, he can see the plan of the Lord. The Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken under such circumstances. King Parikshit was in the forest on an excursion, and he felt very thirsty, and he came to the hermitage of a sage in meditation, and somehow by a higher arrangement King Parikshit became angry. And as a Mahabhagavata, he should not have become angry because he was thirsty and was not received properly. And immediately afterwards, there was a dead snake, and he put it around the neck of the Brahman in meditation. Then immediately he lamented. He felt repentant, which shows his greatness as a devotee. But the Brahman's son, Sringi, when he heard that his father had been insulted, he cursed King Parikshit to die in 7 days of a snake bite. And although Maharaj Parikshit could have counteracted the curse, he accepted it as Krishna's mercy and
he gave up his everything, his family, his kingdom, his royal paraphernalia, and just went to the banks of the Ganges and heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami. Another example was King Chitraketu being cursed by Parvati. King Chitraketu was such an advanced devotee that he had sakshat darshan, he had direct audience of the Lord. And he was traveling through the universe in an aerial conveyance with his associates, and they were singing the glories of the Lord, engaged in Sankirtan. And they happened to fly over Kailash, where Lord Shiva was seated with Parvati on his lap and his arm around her in front of many great sages. And King Chitraketu was struck with wonder. How is it possible that Lord Shiva, who is such a great yogi, is sitting with his wife on his lap in front of so many great sages? He didn't even really criticize King Chitraketu, but he was just struck by wonder. And Parvati took offense on behalf of her husband, and she cursed Chitraketu to fall down and become a demon. And King Chitraketu accepted the curse without any regret. He treated Parvati as his mother. He said, "Yes, mother, whatever you order for me, I will gladly accept on my head." And he also perceived the plan of the Lord to bring him back home, back to Godhead more quickly, just like Maharaj Parikshit. And Lord Shiva, a little bit chided Parvati by glorifying King Chitraketu, that how glorious are the devotees of the Lord, because they are equipoised in every situation. And for them, heaven or hell or liberation are all the same. Yes, Apitu Yartha Darshana, and Srila Prabhupada explains that the reason a devotee is equal in heaven or hell or liberation is that he doesn't live in heaven or hell or anywhere, but he lives with Krishna. So there are many such instances. We mentioned on Ram Navami how a Brahmin had cursed Lord Chaitanya to be bereft of material happiness, and Lord Chaitanya was jubilant because he took that curse as a blessing. So it does happen that a curse is a blessing. And therefore we should be patient and wait for the indication of the Lord. Try to see the purpose of the Lord. There's so many contemporary examples as well. Quite early in the movement, in 1970, Srila Prabhupada detected that some of his disciples had been contaminated by ideas coming from his god brothers in India, and he decided to leave America. And years later, at the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, he commented that Los Angeles was his best temple, and he wanted to make it his headquarters, but because of the disturbance there, he left. And he prayed to the deities, "Why are you doing this?" But then later, as he said at the Krishna Balaram temple, he saw that Krishna gave him a temple much better than he had in Los Angeles. And that Krishna never takes anything away from a devotee except to give him something better. So often when we lose something or when something is taken away from us by force, we become disturbed. But if we keep in mind this idea that Krishna will take something away from a devotee only to give the devotee something better, then we won't react, on impulse, like Kamsa, completely lost control. But we will think philosophically, all right, Krishna has taken this away, what is the plan? What, he's taken it away for a purpose, to give me something better, so let us cooperate with the plan of Krishna. Once Tamal Krishna Goswami was well, without going into too many details or discussing too deeply, let us just say that the GBC decided to take away his Texas zone. And he accepted the decision, although he was very powerful, he certainly could have created some agitation, but he accepted the decision. And then later, he saw the benefit of what had happened, and he quoted the story of King Chitraketu and Parvati. Although Parvati was mistaken in her apprehension of Chitraketu, and in a sense you could say that she was wrong to curse him, but ultimately it was meant for a higher good. And Tamal Krishna Goswami told me that in the same way, the GBC or want some leader or leaders of the GBC. They may have been wrong in what they did, but still it could have been for the ultimate good. He took it as being, you know, for the ultimate good. And when a devotee takes apparent reversals in that spirit, then Krishna is very pleased. In fact, it is said that it could apply equally to Krishna or the spiritual master, that when the disciple accepts chastisement, Krishna is very pleased, and he blesses the disciple with spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada also suffered apparent reversals. He wanted to be Krishna conscious at home. He wanted to preach as a grihastha. But his wife's mood was different. I mean, she was a religious lady, but she was not in the mood of preaching. And you may know the story that once when Srila Prabhupada was away on business, his wife took his most prized possession, Srimad Bhagavatam, and took it to a pawn shop to get some money. She needed some money. So when he came back and asked where his Bhagavatam was, and she gave the answer, she said that she wanted to buy some tea biscuits. She needed the money to buy tea biscuits. And at that time, a certain deep resolution overcame Srila Prabhupada. And he said, "You are going to have to choose between tea and me." So, husband and wife, she thought it was some joking statement. She said, "Oh, I'll choose tea, of course." But it wasn't a joke. And Srila Prabhupada made his determination that he would leave home. There was another similar incident, in a way, similar incident, in the life of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. They were engaged in the service of Nawab Hussein Shah, the Mohammedan ruler of eastern India. And they were his most trusted ministers. Srila Prabhupada said, like a prime minister and a finance minister. And there were reasons why they accepted that position, and why they stayed in that position. And one night, it was raining terribly in Ramakeli, just pouring down torrents of rain, thunder, lightning. And very late at night, a couple in a little cottage heard someone walking very quickly down the footpath in the midst of this tremendous storm. And the wife said to the husband, or vice versa, I wonder who that could be, you know, out so late at night in the middle of this terrible storm. And the other said, oh, it must be Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami. They had other names. They are slaves to the Nawab, and, you know, they will do whatever he says. It must be them. So they overheard this, and the same thing. A firm determination took root in their hearts that they were not going to continue as slaves of the Nawab, to be mocked by the Nawab's citizens of the Nawab's state. So we always have to be open to what is the plan of the Lord for us, what is the desire of the Lord, and not react to apparent reversals, but to see what you're meant to learn from it, what you're meant to get from it. Or even if you can't understand, then just be open to it. As I discussed the other day, the Pandavas were subjected to such terrible tribulations, and at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhishma Dev was lying on the bed of arrows, what that really means is that he had arrows shot through his body, and he was, you know, that was his mattress. And so the Pandavas and Draupadi and Krishna came to see him as he was about to leave his body. And he said, how is it possible that you good souls could have suffered so much? And then finally he says, even though great sages inquire exhaustively, they cannot ascertain the plan of the Lord. And the acharyas who have commented on this portion of Srimad Bhagavatam have said that the Lord was right there. Krishna was right there. So why didn't they just ask Krishna? And they give the answer that Krishna would not have told them what his plan was. And they knew that he wouldn't tell them what his plan was. He would have remained silent. Or even if he would have spoken, he would have spoken in such a deep and mysterious way that they would have been unable to understand what his plan was. And the acharyas quote a verse from the 11th canto. It's a very interesting verse that says that Krishna is pleased with verses in the Vedas that have hidden meanings. Parokshavat, it means like sort of you, from the surface of it, you cannot understand the actual purport. So, yeah, the Vedas are confidential. So Krishna actually is happy that it's not too easy for people to understand. So that way only the most sincere ones will be able to understand. Of course, these are very deep topics, So Krishna, he doesn't let us know his plan sometimes, and then sometimes he does. That is his choice according to what he thinks is best under the circumstances. Like Sanatan Goswami, again in brief, he was suffering from sores that oozed bad liquid. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would embrace him. And Sanatan Goswami would feel terrible because, he just felt it was so offensive to the Lord. So, in the end, he decided to commit suicide by throwing himself under the wheels of the chariot of Lord Jagannath during Ratha Yatra. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as the omniscient Lord, said to him, is it proper that if I give you something, is it proper if you give me something to later take it back or destroy it? And then he said, you have given your body to me, to my service. So now how can you take it back or destroy it? And then he said, there are many things that I want to do, but I am kept here in Jagannath Puri, because he promised his mother that he would stay in Puri, so he wouldn't be too far and she would get news of him. That I am stuck here in Jagannath Puri, but I have many things that I want to do in Vrindavan, and I want to do them through you, through your body. And then he told him, I want you to compile a book on Vaishnava behavior, and then Mahaprabhu gave him the basic idea, and that became Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas. And he said, I want you to go to Vrindavan and excavate the lost places of pilgrimage and show the ideal example of how to live in Vrindavan. He said, I have many things that I want to achieve through your body. And so, anyway, it's a very significant pastime, but so the Lord can reveal his plan to a devotee when the time is right. And although the Bhagavatam says that although great sages inquire exhaustively, no one can understand the plan of the Lord, commentators say that although no one can ascertain the plan of the Lord, although they inquire exhaustively, still devotees inquire. They do inquire, and they should inquire. So that is sort of our, it's our duty, and it's our nature. And if we think about it, we do that. I mean, any sincere devotee will do that, you know. Now I'm getting older, what should I do? Am I just going to stay home and wait for the grandchildren to be born and then take care of the grandchildren, or am I going to go out and preach? And so devotees are thinking, and then they... anyway, there's so many variations, but we always do that. We always try to understand what is the best thing to do for Krishna's service. And then how do we get the answer? So by being very sincere and chanting and praying, Krishna can give us the answer in the heart. Sometimes by consulting with others, trusted devotees, mature devotees, we can get guidance by reading the books. We may get the answer jumping out from the page of the books. So Krishna makes himself available through his holy name, the deity, the scripture, the devotees. And so if we're really sincere and really eager to know what he wants of us, so then we'll approach him in a very earnest and honest way. And when he sees that we're really sincere and eager and ready to do what he says, sometimes we don't exactly want to know what he wants because it might conflict with our ideas and plans, which might include a quantity of comfort for ourselves. So sometimes you don't even really want to know. But if we're ready and are not placing any conditions, but are really ready to do whatever he wants and really beg him to tell us what he wants, then he can reveal that to us. And if we do have some attachment that's holding us back, he might take it away from us. And that will also be for our benefit. Although we might resist it, but ultimately it will be for our benefit, and many such examples. The famous verse, Yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadanam shanai. Krishna says, when I'm especially favorably inclined to some devotee, the first installment of my special mercy is I take away his material attachments. So that's good for us. Srila Prabhupada used to quote a Bengali saying that the Lord, with his 10 hands, if he wants to take something from us, how much can we hold on to with our 2 hands? And if he wants to give us something with his 10 hands, how much can we accept with our 2 hands? So Yeah, the Lord giveth it, the Lord taketh. But in the case of devotees, both are for the benefit of the devotee, his taking and his giving. And his taking is also just another way of creating a situation in which he can give more. Hare Krishna. So, are there any questions or comments? Radha Vinod.
Yes, in the extremely conditioned state, one thinks that the Lord is not so much concerned with one's activities because of one's fallen condition, so then the inclination would be saying that reverses are just reverses, or the Lord has forgotten one. So the question would be how much deception is there in one's conditioned state or fallen conditioned state?
How much what is there?
Intervention.
Intervention. As Radha Vinod Prabhu says that in our conditioned state, to what extent is the Lord involved in our lives and to what extent are we just suffering the reactions to our karma? That is a good question. But once a devotee surrenders to Krishna through the spiritual master, the spiritual master and Krishna take charge. And Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna will use the devotee's sinful reactions to the devotee's best benefit. A very interesting idea that, okay, you surrender to Krishna through the spiritual master. And Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mame Kam Saranam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayisyami. If you surrender to Krishna, he will free you from all sinful reactions. But it is seen, and authorities like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur have explained that it is a gradual process. We surrender, and the spiritual master, on behalf of Krishna, accepts enough of the sinful reactions so that you can better understand the science of Krishna so that you can make more progress. Because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yesham tvantagatam papam janmanam punyakarma, that those who are freed from sinful actions and reactions, who've acted piously in this birth and previous births, they can take to devotional service. So if someone is afflicted by too many sinful reactions, you won't really be able to take to devotional service. And therefore, at the time of initiation, Krishna, or the spiritual master on behalf of Krishna, accept enough of the disciple's sinful reactions that he can progress. But we experience practically that we do continue to suffer, and therefore Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's a gradual process. And Srila Prabhupada also gives the example of the fan. The fan is turning, and when you surrender to Krishna, it's like pulling out the plug. But there's still some momentum, and it gradually slows down and stops. So Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna, he takes charge of the devotee's sinful reactions, and then he releases them for the best interest of the devotee. So even if we feel that we're suffering some reaction for our past sins, but if we've surrendered to Krishna, then that is the sinful reactions are being meted out to us in a certain quantity at a certain time for our benefit. So again, we can learn from it and progress more. But if you take it the other way, that it's just the material world, there's always suffering in the material world, and you just tolerate it and save your energy for Krishna consciousness, that's all right too. Like once I was walking at White Rock Lake. This was just a few weeks ago when I was here before Houston. And so a lady stopped and, you know, there was some discussion and afterwards I was thinking like what's with her? You know, was she like just a sincere seeker, or did she have some ulterior motive? Then I went back to my chanting, and I was still thinking, like, what is that? It was so uncanny. Like, it seemed like Krishna sent her, but then what was it? And then I thought, it doesn't matter. It's just the world. The world will go on. I'm not here to figure out the world. I'm here to chant the holy name. The world will go on. And so I said, just let that go. I said, and just chant. So that's also good. Something happens, good or bad or whatever. It's just the world. That's it. The world's going to go on. My karma's going to go on. Everything's going to go on. Let it go on, and let me focus on the holy name. Now that's also a legitimate response. Any other questions? Yes.
My question is about Kamsa and Narayana. I'm just curious because I know, like, even in Krishna's appearance, Narayana had advised Kamsa that Krishna was coming, and I understand why he's doing it, because he wanted Krishna to appear faster and also doing it in service to Krishna. But what I don't understand is how Kamsa trusts what Narayana says. How does he trust this here stage? I mean, ultimately, there has to be something revealed that, that Narada Muni is devoted to Krishna or something. So I'm just trying to understand that relationship of how Kamsa, trusts Narada Muni to, champion this powerful demon. He arranges all these things. I'm just wondering how Narada Muni is able to manipulate that.
Well, Narada Muni, it's a very powerful sage, and he could have that influence. I told this story once. I'll tell it again, that in the struggle for the Juhu land, at a certain stage, the devotees canceled the sales agreement. And so technically, the devotees had no legal standing. They had no right even to be on the property. But You know, so Srila Prabhupada wanted to have the sales agreement reinstated. So he arranged to meet with Mr. Nair in Hyderabad. And Mr. Nair brought a guru with him because he thought that Srila Prabhupada might use some mystic power to convince him to agree to something he didn't want to agree to. So he brought his guru to, like, counteract Prabhupada's mystic powers. So, you know, underneath it all, they were adversaries in this situation, Srila Prabhupada and Mr. Nair. And, you know, there's some light formalities, you know, that's just how cultured people are under certain circumstances. And at a certain stage, the first meeting was in the evening. The idea was they were going to meet the next day. And they were staying in Mr. Panalal Pitti's estate. He was a very wealthy man who had a big estate. And so Mr. Nair's guru said to Srila Prabhupada, "Swamiji, you appear to be very tired. I think we should let you take rest." And Prabhupada yawned. "Yes, actually I am tired. We should take rest." So then Mr. Nair and his guru went to the next room to take rest. Then 2 minutes later, Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Goswami, "The psychology is that he was tired. So that's why he said, 'You look tired, you probably need rest.' He said it because he was actually tired and he wanted to go to sleep." So very quietly, you go into the next room and you will find that Nair's guru is sleeping. And so very quietly, you wake up Nair and bring him to me. So Tamal Krishna Goswami went into the next room. Sure enough, the guru was snoring away. He like woke up Nair, and Nair was in a daze. He brought Nair in front of Prabhupada, and they made a new sales agreement. So, yeah, I mean, that's sometimes even demons accept the words of saintly persons. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Gaur Premanandi.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Giriraj Goswami Maharaj ki jai.